Okay. So sometimes it's very healthy to realize that what you do, what you practice, is not the only possibility. Like, we all grew up with certain practices, and we think, okay, if we practice that, it's obvious that that's the way, that's the correct religious procedure. Then you encounter another minhag, it could be very helpful, because you can suddenly question your own minhag and understand it on a much deeper level. So a good example with this would be putting on tefillin every morning. Right? If you're Ashkenazi, you're used to the fact, of course, you make two brachot on tefillin, right? Tefillin shel yad gets its own bracha, lahaniach, and then tefillin shel rosh gets a different bracha, al mitzvah. Okay, then one day you go to the Sephardi minyan. Okay, who's here? We lost him. Okay, Andrew, correct? Okay, how many brachot do you make every morning? There you go. You're sitting next to Andrew Arking, and you discover he only makes one bracha. Wait, JJ, you only make one?
Yeah.
You're not Sephardi.
Yeah.
You are?
Well,
really? Wait, what's your background?
Iraqi.
Okay. Isn't your last name Jacobs?
Jacob.
And that is an Iraqi name?
I don't really ask questions.
Okay. Okay, there you go. I did not know of more Sephardi blood among us. Okay, any other surprising Sephardim I should know about?
Charles.
Who else? I said surprising Sephardim? Okay. Charles has got like Sephardi written all over him. Okay. All right, so what?
Gabe
Dainem, that's right. Gabe, how many brachot do you make? Oh, there you go. See, guys? So you discover this Sephardim only make one brachot. So all of a sudden, what seems so obvious, obviously, tefillin should have two brachot. Say, well, apparently it's not obvious. There must be reason Ashkenazi make two and Sephardim make one. And maybe if you then challenge yourself, maybe it comes to deeper understanding why Ashkenazi make two. Okay, so let's start with the Ki Gemara and Menachot. Okay, just one other interesting thing that happened here. Some of you might realize there's no Mishnayot about Tzitzis and Tefillin. So therefore, if the Gemara is looking for a conversation about Tzitzis and Tefillin, it wasn't so obvious where to place it. Okay, I shouldn't say there's no Mishnayot. There's no Masechet Tzitzis. There's no Masechet Tefillin. So, interestingly enough, they're all in a Masechet called Menachot. Okay, what's Menachot actually about? Anybody? And or which Seder Menachot's in? Kachim. Who said Kachim? Okay, very good then, Zach. Okay, what's Menachot actually about? Yeah, what's a Karban Mincha?
The flower offering.
So it's kind of interesting that the discussion in Shas about Tzitzis and Tefillin are in a Masechet that's actually about flower offerings. What the deeper connection is there, I'm not sure, but Simon Kaufman will tell you very much. Okay, so let's go to this Gemara in Menachot. Amar Rav Chisda. Sach ben tefila le tefila. So we tend to not realize that the word tefillin is a plural form. So the singular is actually tefila. So even though it says tefila, we think of prayer. Here it means one part of the tefillin. And sach, one of the things you realize about the Hebrew language, guys, sometimes samach and sins are interchangeable. So which word is sach actually? Like the word siach, sicha, right? A talk. So if you speak, we try not to talk between the shliyad and the sarosh. What happens if you do talk between them? You have to go back and make a bracha. Okay, so what does it sound like here? You'd like the bracha of the shalyah to cover the shalrosh, ideally, but if you talk between them, it doesn't work, so you make a bracha on the shalrosh. So it says Gemara, sach in, lo sach lo. So it sounds like I only make a bracha if I speak. Notice, not the same bracha. Lahaniach on the yad, mitzvah on the rosh. In any case, we think that challenges the previous conversation. Here's the answer. Abayav Rabam Tarvayu. Here's how it works. Lo sach, if I don't talk, mevarich achat, I make one bracha. Sach, mevarich shtayim. But if I talk, I make two brachot. Okay, now we're going to see a certain ambiguity there in 1 second. Let's just get the basic line down. Okay, what did Abayav Rabam rule? If you converse between yad and shorosh, it's one bracha. Sorry, if you don't converse, it's one bracha. If you do converse, it's two brachot. What this means, we'll see in a second. One more line. Tana sach ben tefila tefila aveirihi biyado. This is a transgression. V'chozer alem erchei ha-melchama. A little interesting closing note there. What's that a reference to? Chozer ha-melchama? So there's a very interesting thing in Judaism that there's a speech before wartime, who gets to go home? You guys remember learning about this? Who gets to go home besides sinners? Newlyweds, excellent. There's a question of who should get to go home. But one of the... I'm sorry? Very good, guys. Excellent. Very interesting discussion about that. Okay, but also, we say those who are afraid, it says those who are afraid. Mishi arei v'racha levav. That's what it says in Psukim. And even though the simple pshat is those who are afraid of battle, right? But what does Chazal say? You might also be afraid because you have sins in your pocket, right? You're afraid because you're a sinner. Okay, so what does this Gemara claim? talking between the tefillin is somehow the kind of sin that you might want to avoid battle for. Okay, it's a way of saying that's more serious, I suppose. Okay, we're good? Okay, but let's go back to the main idea. What was Abaye Rava's conclusion? If you speak between the two, sorry, if you don't speak one bracha, if you do speak two bracha, what did that mean? So now we see a great debate between Rashi and Tam, and we should get this down for a good Talmudic trivia game. It turns out that Rashi and his grandson had two major debates about tefillin. People think it's only one, but really there are two. What is their other famous tefillin debate? Very good. Not how many parshiot, but the sequence of the parshiot. Right? There are famously four parshiot in your tefillin. Why are there four parshiot in your tefillin? Why four? Because there are four times the Torah that there's references to tefillin. So we pick all those passages. Those are the four passages. Right? Like Shema, Vayim Shemoa. Okay, great. But there's a question what the order should be. Okay, and that's why, okay, Chabadniks. Sam, do you do this? Two pairs of tefillin? Okay, all right. Okay, so some people will put on two pairs of tefillin because Rashi has one sequence of the parshiot and Rabbeinu Tam has a different sequence of the parshiot. Okay, we're good? Okay, we've seen it done. Okay, but we now are not discussing that about Rashi Rabbeinu Tam, we're discussing a different Rashi Rabbeinu Tam. Okay, here we go. Let's look at source two. Look at Rashi Lo Sach. Okay, Rashi changes everything. Lo Sach, the second line of Rashi. Ein Mavarach El Ashel Yad Bilvad. According to Rashi, what happens in Lo Sach? How many brachot they make all told? One. So according to Rashi, what's the ideal? I'm supposed to only make one bracha, and that bracha is supposed to cover the shalyad and the shalrosh. What happens if I talk? Well, since you spoke, only in that scenario would I make a bracha on the shalrosh. Everyone understand? So Rashi would seem to be a source for whose custom, of course? The Sephardi custom, right? That the norm is only one bracha in total. That's what it means, lo sach mevarech achat. But if you talk, then you make another bracha on the shalrosh. Andrew, you ever remember doing this? You ever speak accidentally between your shalyad and shalrosh? Okay, excellent. Yair, it's happened to you? Okay, great. Now what? Where's Charles? Oh, there he is. Okay, excellent. Okay, we need you here, Charles, for sure, Coley. Okay, since you're going to have the next, you know, burger battle with Josh Kornblum. It's going to be burger market against burger bar. Very exciting. Okay, we'll see who wins. Okay, so now what's a little bit unusual according to this though about the bracha? Again, look at the Sephardi reading the Gemara here. If I don't talk and I keep myself together, so what bracha do I make on the shalyad? Laniach. Now apparently I want that laniach to cover my shalyad and my shalrosh. What happens if I talk? Yeah, David Lipschitz.
Well, then you say all this.
Yeah, isn't that interesting? Wait, if you talk, you'd say, okay, I messed up my laniach. What would be the natural next move? I make laniach again on my shalrosh. It's kind of interesting, according to the Sephardim. But no, at that point you switch brachot. Right? Even though laniach was the bracha you wanted to cover both, somehow once you spoke and now you're making a bracha again on the shalrosh, we switch to a different bracha. So that, I think, would be need a little work to explain the Sephardi tradition. Okay, we'll go to that? Okay, great. Let's go back now to Tosfot. Okay, so we get to, remember Tosfot, a lot of Rashi's grandchildren and great-grandchildren, but they were free to disagree. And what was Gemara learning, right? You strive for truth. You disagree with your grandfather. Okay, can anyone name three different Tosfot members who were descendants of Rashi? Okay, Rabbeinu Tam, Rashbam, and the Ri. Okay, Rabbeinu Tam and Rashbam were grandsons of Rashi. They were brothers, in fact. And the Ri was a great-grandson of Rashi. So Rashi's family is pretty dominant in the Tosfot world. Okay, so what do we have in Tosfot here? Okay, lo sach mevarech achat, sach mevarech shtayim. Pirish v'kuntres, lo sach mevarech achat, ben shalyad, ben shalrosh. Sach mevarech shtayim, lo nech v'm shalyad, v'm mitzvah v'm shalrosh. Rabbeinu Tam Pirish, what does Rashi's grandson say? Lo sach mevarech achat l'shalrosh. Sorry. Lo sach mevarech achat l'shalrosh. Yes. Mevarech ha-mitzvah, I'll do it again. Finally, I'll stop in the right place. Lo sach mevarech achat. What does that mean? L'sharosh mevarech ha-mitzvah tefillin, shezui berchato. Sach mevarech shtayim l'sharosh, l'aniyah ve'al mitzvah. How does he read the original Gemara, according to Ben Tam? What was the ideal plan? What's the ideal plan? You don't mess up? One bracha for each. L'aniyah for the shalyad and al mitzvah sharosh. What happens if you talk in between? What do you have to do then? You need to take that l'aniyah from the shalyad and make it again, because you wanted l'aniach to cover the shalrosh, and now you have to make two brachot. So obviously, Rabbeinu Tam is the source of the Ashkenazi minhag. Again, so according to, we've got a very good split in the Gemara here. Rashi is the source of the Sephardi minhag. really ideally one bracha, but if you talk, you make another bracha on the shalrosh. And Rebbeinu Tam, source of Ashkenazi minhag, ideally two brachot, one on each, but if you talk, you end up making both brachot on the shalrosh. You're all good so far? You know, logically, what do you say, guys? Rebbeinu Tam, you see him as advantageous to Rashi, you see a difficulty to Rebbeinu Tam. What do you say? Just in terms of the logic of the brachot. Okay, I'm going to try, what do you think, guys? Rebbeinu Tam, he's in great shape, you got a question on him. What might you wonder according to Rebbeinu Tam? You don't have to have a question, it's okay. Yeah, Nate?
What would you do with the bracha that you always have to shalrosh?
If you talk, you still make it, right?
Again,
yeah, maybe people are unclear. According to Rebbeinu Tam, what am I supposed to do from Ashkenazi? I put in the shayad and I make baniach. I put in the shalrosh and I make al mitzvah. Okay, let us say after I put in the shalyad, someone says something to me and I get distracted and talk to him. What do I do in my shalrosh? I make lahaniach and al mitzvah. Okay, all right, you have a question?
You asked a question on.
Yeah.
Why does he have
excellent. That's an interesting question. What's really lurking here in Rashi versus Rebbeinu Tam? Rashi says the ideal is one bracha, and Rebbeinu Tam says the ideal is two. Well, why is the ideal two? Am I making two brachot on one mitzvah? I mean, two brachot on two mitzvah? What exactly is going on here with the second bracha? So that's a good example of what I said in the beginning, guys, why encountering this other tradition could be helpful to us. We're used to making two. It never struck us as anything unusual. But we keep, all of a sudden we encounter Andrew Arkin here and Charles. We say, wait, that's it. And and JJ, okay, our hidden smarty. And all of a sudden we're curious. We're like, what's going on? Why do we make two? So it can help us question and understand our position. Yeah, Josh, go.
I guess if he, kind of going on that, if he thinks that we make a second bracha because it's a different mitzvah, then why would we have to make up the bracha that we did for them? Well, if we have to make up the first bracha,
we say it's the R. Excellent. You're right. It can't be just that really l'haniach is only for the shalyah and mitzvah is only for the shalrosh. Clearly, we somehow need the l'haniach to go to the shalrosh also. So in some ways, that even furthers Ari's question. Where we are having l'haniach relate to the shalrosh, so why in the world are we making two separate brachot? Excellent point. Jacob Glassman.
The opinion kind of comes to both things. So the l'haniach will still account for the shalrosh, but just in case it is actually for the brachot, we make the other brachot too.
Okay, so we'll see what's motivating shortly. John Seidel.
So when Rabbi when it said there are two bracha, according to Rashi, the second bracha is not, it's only
a backup. Yeah.
A backup.
You could argue it's not the simplest reading. Okay, that's just in terms of reading the Gemara. You could argue many times an easier reading, but that's for another time. Yeah, John?
Not necessarily that it's just one
different. Okay. And what's going on with the two brachot? What's go? Yeah, finish your point. I'm sorry.
Because if you don't, it doesn't say that you have to take off the shoulder.
Okay.
Okay. That makes it sound like
they're
two separate
mitzvahs. Okay, good. Okay. But I still think that point we should push ourselves a little bit further and say why they're two different brachot. What are we trying to accomplish with these two brachot? Is that fair?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. It's
like food away from the before brachot. Okay, whoa, radical theory there. Interesting. Okay. Food's a good analogy, not such a great analogy.
The analogy itself is not great, but I think
it's taking before Brahma. Okay, Dan Shapiro, the ancient Kiddush there, guys. See, he's not just a cute ukulele player. He's a lot deeper. Okay. He says that maybe there's some constant mitzvot of an after bracha. Okay, that's an interesting idea. Okay, yeah, David Lipschitz.
We don't find that in any other mitzvot.
So that's the question. Can we find any paradigm to an after bracha in the world of mitzvot? Okay, we'd have to think about that. Dan, you think about it?
Yeah.
Okay, we're good? Everyone okay with that? Where's Jacob Rocco? No? Okay. What?
Thank you.
He's hiding? Jacob, what are you doing over there? Are you hiding from me?
No.
No? Okay. Okay. So we're going to try to understand on a deeper level what's happening between Rashi and Rebbeinu Tam. Okay, let's just see how this plays out in terms of practical halacha. Okay, obviously practical halacha, we tend to go to the Shulchan Aruch. So let us go to source 4. As the Shulchan Aruch paskin regarding tefillin? So he says, v'yaniach shal yad tchila, v'yavarech laniach tefillin, v'achach yaniach shal rosh, here it is, v'lo yavarech ki imbracha achat l'shtehem. Indeed, Rav Yosef Karo sides with Rashi, in the ideal scenario there's only one bracha, and that is indeed Svardi practice. Okay, terrific. Now comes Rav Moshe Islis from Krakow. Hagav Yeshomrim, Levarech al Sharosh al Mitzvah Tfilin, Afilu Lo Hifsik Bentayim. There it is. Right? That is the standard Ashkenazi minhag, that the ideal is two brachot, even when you didn't talk. Okay, so that's exactly as we've said. Okay, but now an interesting minhag comes up. V'tov omar tamir achrei abracha shnia brach shem kvod mechut olam ve'ed. So you probably all taught this, all you Ashkenazim. What do you say after a mitzvah tefillin? You immediately say Baruch Shem. Okay, what were you taught for the reason why you say Baruch Shem? Yes, Simon? So Baruch Shem seems to be some formula that helps you address bracha l'batala. And what seems to be the case here? We're afraid the second bracha is superfluous. Maybe Rashi and the Sfardim are right, that it's only one bracha. So to address that, what do we ask Ashkenazim do? Second bracha, but then we then come in with our bracha l'batala saver and say Baruch Shem. Okay, everyone got that down? Okay, but we're going to see in a second, that's debatable if that's what's really going on. And we're going to see like a radical new theory to try to explain Baruch Shem. David Baruch, what do you want to say?
So why does that stop Baruch Hu?
I mean, why is that a savior? Okay, that's a good question, which I'm not going to deal with right now. But you might have been taught though at some point, luckily, let's say you start a Baruch and realize you shouldn't have said it. People will tell you, say Baruch Shem, Kol Mokdol Bed. It's kind of a way of, you know, giving it purpose anyway. Right? Blessed be the name of God, and I just gave, that's what I was trying to do right now. Okay, Jonah?
There are other times in Judaism when they say two brachot on one mitzvah.
There are other times.
Yeah.
Yes. Like what? What? Okay, great. Okay, so Jonah's level is right. It's not so shocking to have multiple brachot on a performance. How about Chanukah candles? How about Megillat Esther? How about a Brit Milah? Okay. Why is matzah not a great example? You know, it's true there are two brachot when I pick a matzah. I would argue, arguably, one is a birkat mitzvah. And the other is a birkat hananim. Although David Lifshitz could make a very lumpish point, you could say maybe when I make a birkat hananim in that context, it might take on the qualities of birkat mitzvah. Can anyone tell me another bracha like that? That's actually a very interesting thing. Another bracha that, as a standalone bracha, is just a birkat hananim. Ah, very good example. Who else that? Ari, excellent. Ari, he played ball twice since last week, guys. It's very exciting. Just twice, right? What? You played ball twice since last year, right? Okay, great. Of course, he got hurt the first time, but it's okay. Okay, excellent. Okay, so Breit Ber Gavin's a great example, right? Breit Ber Gavin certainly looks like a classic Birkat Hananim, but maybe in the context of Kiddush, it turns into... In fact, I have a great proof. You guys ready for great proof? I could do this. I have enough time for a little halachic tangent. I have a great proof that it turns into Birkat Mitzvah. One of the differences in Birkat Hananim and Birkat Mitzvah is the following. Okay, let's say... Okay, I'm going out to lunch with Joe Schnitzer. Okay, so obviously we're going flashers. Okay, so now, Joe says, Rabbi, I'm too tired to make a bracha today. Can you make a shahakal on my steak for me? Okay, and I'll just listen. Does that work? Sure. If I'm eating and he's eating, I can make a shahakal and he's yotzi. It's all great. What if I started eating before him? Okay, and I already made my shahakal. Can I make a shahakal for him?
No.
I've got that down. That's the way it works in Birkat Hananim. If I need the bracha, I can make the bracha for him. If I don't need the bracha, I can't make the bracha for him. Okay, good. What about in the world of Birkat HaMitzvah? What if I'm blowing shofar for you, and I already was yotzi the mitzvah of shofar? Okay, I could still make, not only can I still blow for you, I could still make the bracha for you. Ever see that? So that's the difference. That gets why it's a Gemara in Rosh Hashanah. Birkat HaMitzvot I could do even if I fulfilled it already. Birkat Hananim I can't. Everyone good so far? Okay, but now I have a killer question for you guys. That should mess us up every Shabbos. Let's say your dad goes to the shul kiddush. Okay, and he's already yotze kiddush. Okay, a lot of shuls take their kiddushes very seriously. Right, so man, was he yotze. Okay, Charles, you have a serious kiddush there? Man? Yeah, what do they serve? That's pretty serious, okay? But for whatever reason, Charles said, I'm not eating this kiddush. Okay, I'm not eating today. I'm working on my, you know, gashmias. I'm separated from gashmias. I'm not eating a kiddush. Now we're home. Now they're at home. His dad gets up to make Kiddush again. And he's saying, I'm going to be Motzi Charles. Should that work or shouldn't work? You might tell me, well, it's a Birkat HaMitzvah, so it's okay. But wait, the Kiddush consists of Borei Pri Hagafen. Right? Didn't we say when it comes to Birkat Hananim, you can't be Motzi somebody if you already fulfilled it yourself? So what's the answer? Do you understand the question before you get the answer? Did I lose you or you're okay? What's the answer? Hilly? Okay, what if... All right, I see, that's where you guys are confused, right. Fine, I messed up the case. Let's try it again. Let's say Okay, Charles' dad made Kiddush at home. He didn't make Kiddush until he made Kiddush at home half an hour ago. But he's still at the table. He's still enjoying a good cup of wine. And now the whole family comes in. He wants to make Kiddush again. Right, so why can he make Brei Pirgafen again? Exactly, because even this Brei Pirgafen, since it's service in Kiddush, it turns into a Birkat HaMitzvah. That's what I went there to say. Right, so that's why David Lipschitz's point might be correct. But Joan is right. Maybe we should look at parallels where we make multiple brachot. We'll come back to your point. Dan?
Can he make a bracha like, is he allowed to make Kiddush for his wife as also the Kiddush?
Absolutely.
But like, he's already made it.
He can make it for, well, if he can make it for Charles, why can't he make it for Charles' mom?
I mean, I don't know if he can make it
for Charles either. Okay, so since I asserted he can make it for Charles, he can make it for mom also.
Yeah.
Okay? We're good? Okay, great. Okay, so let's go to two interpretations of this. We'll get back to the multiple brachot in a second. We're just trying to understand Baruch Shem. We'll get back to the multiple brachot in about 5 minutes. So here's an interesting split. It's good to be aware of these two works. You know, every once in a while, people feel there's a need for a new halakhic commentary. So, two peers, both in the late 1800s, early 1900s, were working on it. One was the Chafetz Chaim, and he, of course, wrote the Mishnah Berura. And one was a man named Yechiel Michel Epstein, and he wrote the Aruch HaShulchan. So it's good to realize, because they're very different works, both in terms of scope and in terms of style. And what their differences in terms of scope, what they cover? Okay, so remember, you guys, there are four Chalakim of Shulchan Aruch. Okay, how many of the four Chalakim did the Mishnah Berura write a commentary on?
One.
What? Okay, he wrote a commentary on one out of four, only on the Aruch HaShulchan. So as I tell my shiur all the time, if someone tells you, AJ, they tell you on the bus, I'm going to look up the Mishnah Berura on how to write a ksuva, what do you say to them? Yeah, that's very silly, right? Because the ksuva is in Evan Ezer. The Mishnah Berura did not write a commentary on Evan Ezer. Okay, great. The Aruch HaShulchan, though, Rabbi Epstein wrote a commentary on all four. So one advantage of Aruch HaShulchan is that the scope is much wider. You could get halakhic analysis of all four aspects of Shulchan Aruch. The other thing is, are there differences in terms of their style, not just scope? I don't know.
Is he like more like reasoning?
Mishnah Berura is much more bottom line, right? Not that you don't have any reasoning, but cut to the chase, and you actually like go through the whole sugya. Here's what it says in the Gemara, here's what it says in Tosfot. So I admit each one has an advantage. You want to just get the bottom line psak, right? Mishnah Berura is more user friendly. But often when I'm learning, I like to get the whole flow of the sugya, so I often prefer to get backward from Aruch HaShulchan. So it's a good work to be aware of. We have a whole set in our doubles room, so guys, check it out. So we're going to see a split now, and they're contemporary. It's kind of interesting. Let's see how the Mishnah Berura explains the Baruch Shem and how the Aruch HaShulchan explains the Baruch Shem. Okay, Mishnah Berura, source 5. V'tov lomar, mishum chashash savik brach levatala. There it is. Why are you saying Baruch Shem kod malchuto? You want to avoid brach levatala. Let's keep reading. V'lo shu safek gamur. Very interesting. What is he claiming? It's not really, we have a suffix. How does he know that? Dim K, Eich Yivarech Mi Suffix Brach Levatala, Vi Yismoch Al Shiyom Rebrach Shem Kod Malamed. He's got a great point. What's our general rule about Suffix Brach? Suffix Brach Lakel. We don't make them. Once we have this Brach Shem move, what could we have said? Every time we have a Suffix Brach, just make the Brach and put your magic solution and then say, but we don't do that. So what does that show? That is not the rule when it comes to Suffix Brachot. So what could be going on here? So let's see what he says. Okay, so he says, Eladanan b'nei Ashkenaz sfirlan l'halachik da b'nei Tam. So what emerges? We can't really think it's a suffix. What do we really think? We're really sure that Rabbeinu Tam's right. Namely, you should make two brachot. What are we doing? Some extra precaution. We got a little nervous about tefillin making another bracha, so we throw in Baruch Shem. We don't really think that you need it. Ever got Mishnah Berura's approach? See, if we, according to Mishnah Berura, if you had a real suffix bracha, what would be the move? Don't make a bracha. Here we don't really have a suffix. We're really convinced from being the Tom is a better reading. So we make a bracha, but like this just extra frumkeit, extra precaution, we throw in bracha. Okay, everyone go that? Okay. Let us go to the Aruch HaShulchan. He's going to disagree. Okay, Jacob Broccoli. You sure you're not hiding?
Very positive.
Okay. It looks like you're hiding.
Would you like me to come sit in the front?
Yes. Okay. Maybe you're afraid I'm going to use your new nickname, Jacob.
Nope, it's fine.
I was waiting for you to say a finish so I could quote it. Okay, we'll wait a little longer. Okay. Thank you, Jacob. Okay, let's go to source 6. Okay, so the Aruch HaShulchan quotes the same idea. Then maybe it's because of Brach Levatala. Maybe that's what's motivating Baruch Shem. And then he says, look at the third line. The Eino Muvan Klal, I don't understand that at all. This is a great abbreviation. Does anyone know what that abbreviation is on the third line? Not the Baruch Shem one. The Mem Mem Nun.
Oh, no, no.
Tan Seidel, what do you say? What is Mem Mem Nun in Talmudic literature? Anyone?
Joe.
No, Mem Mem is Mikol Makom. What about Mem Mem Nun? Joe. Ben Kaplan, what do you say? Can I hear the phrase Mimanafshach?
No?
Mimanafshach, does it ring a bell? Look it up in the frame. Okay. Okay. Oh, yeah. Okay. Mimanafshach means either way. Okay? Mimanafshach, either way. Let's look how it's used here. Because I don't understand. Im hadavar mufebi adenu, if it's weak, we're not sure we should make two brachot. Says what Mamanashav means either way, I don't understand. If we're not so sure, how many brachot should we make? One. Im hadin barur biyadeinu. If on the other hand we're clear that we should, im kein, lamalana lomar. And what's that? He basically doesn't like the Mishnah's answer. I've got the phrase guy, I've got your Yeshiva's terminology down. You'd say, let's say Mr. Burr says the answer. What would the Aruch HaShulchan turn to him and say? Mamanashach. If we're not sure, we should make one bracha. And if we're sure, we should make two without having to say Baruch Shem. Let's see what the Man of Shach works. Okay, that's that. I understand. What do you mean? Oh, we were sure, but we throw it in anyway. Like, how does that work? So look what he says. Amazing. You'd bet. Laniut dati nered damir Baruch Shem kol kol bed. Eino mitam sapik bracha. El mitam acher. Sometimes, guys, if the normal paradigm doesn't work, you have to look for a new paradigm. If you can't explain it based on Suffolk Brachot, maybe there's some other reason why we're saying Baruch Shem. What is it? Now notice, sometimes one problem will help another problem. Let's go back to Rabbeinu Tam. As Ari Portel said, if you hold like Rabbeinu Tam, that the norm is two Brachot, you might wonder, how come here all of a sudden there's a norm of two Brachot? And Jonas Obel said very well, we have this model sometimes, but usually, if you think about that model, the extra bracha is doing different work. I'll give you an example. Let's say I light Hanukkah candles on the third night. I make a bracha, Asher Kitchanu, Lahavlik Nershal Hanukkah, and I make Sh'asa Nisim. Would you guys call that two brachot on the act of mitzvah? You might formulate it differently. What might you say? Where's the second bracha coming from? Maybe the second bracha because there's a different theme. What extra theme is there? Okay, you could call it Birkat Shevach. You could say, because what are the theme we have when we light Hanukkah candles? We are doing an act of Persumi Nisa. Maybe Persumi Nisa calls for a bracha. So maybe sometimes you could find some other theme. There's the act itself and some larger theme at work. Maybe that's what calls for the second bracha. Right, so let's see if we can plug in something similar over here. Okay, here we go. So he says in your Gimel, V'chein eli de birkat al mitzvah tefillin, he birkat hoda. K'mosh kutum yikodem biot mitzvah zu ha-kesher ha-gadol shemekasher Yisrael lavim shebashamayim. Very interesting. What does he want to claim? He's going to solve both problems together. Which bracha is a bracha on the act per se? Laniach. Even think about the words, right? That's the physical act. I'm putting tefillin on. Laniach. What is al mitzvah tefillin? That is a bracha about a larger theme. If tefillin is some crucial symbol about the relationship between God and the Jewish people, so that's what we're making a bracha on. And Dan, it's not exactly an after bracha, but it's somewhere along your lines. He calls it a birkat hodah. It's more of a birkat shevach. Okay, where does birkat shem fit in? One second, guys. So he goes a little bit later and he says, three lines from the end. If you're trying to express the connection between God and the Jewish people, Shema Yisrael is certainly a good way to go. And don't forget the Shema passage. Why is the Shema passage also relevant? Beyond the fact that it's an expression of our connection to God, it is one of the passages that has tefillin. Where's Jonah Rivkin? Okay, here we go, Jonah. Kumo Shiyakubin Anakin Beitra Shvat Amu Shema Yisrael Di Pesachim. What does the Gemara Pesachim famously say? When was Baruch Shem first said? In a dialogue between Yaakov and his sons. Right? The Baruch Shem was the response to Shema Yisrael. Right? The kids say Shema Yisrael, and Yaakov responds to Baruch Shem. But notice, isn't that interesting? Yaakov Shulchan has totally revolutionized our conception. What do we all learn our whole lives? Baruch Shem in the context of Tefillin is what? It is a protection against Suffolk brachot against bracha levatala, right? That's the way the Mishnah Berurah goes. That's the standard. Aruch HaShulchan totally revolutionized everything. It's not what's going on at all. It's not what's going on. What's going on? Laniach is a bracha on the act. al mitzvah is a brachat shevach on the relationship. We're talking about our connection to God. And since that's a Shema Yisrael theme, we respond to that by saying Baruch Shem. You guys good with that? Pretty interesting Kiddush. Any questions or comments on that? We're good so far. Since it's filed that away, we now have two understandings of what we're doing when we're saying Baruch Shem. David.
So I understand that when you have to be lean, it is the actual act that you're doing, the mitzvah. But for most other mitzvahs, the actual bracha is usually al mitzvot and the act, or like whatever it is.
Wait, where do you have al mitzvot? Not so common. I can think of only a couple. Why? Sitz is not a great example, guys. Anyone? Who here wears a talib gadol before they're married? Okay, what bracha do you make in the morning? Okay, so it's very interesting. When you put on a tal katan, it's true the bracha is al mitzvah. But if you put on a tal gadol, the bracha is lita teif. So I would say, actually, David, the norm is not to make a bracha called al mitzvah. Normally you refer to the specific act. Right? You don't say al mitzvah lulav, you say al netilat lulav. You don't say al mitzvah matzah, you say achilat matzah. So I would actually say this does help, right? The Aruch HaShulchan's theory. Yeah?
So we're just saying that we're saying the natural response.
Okay. When you're in the Shema Yisrael universe, Baruch Shem is the natural response. And tefillin is kind of, when you make a bracha tefillin, you're in that Shema Yisrael headspace.
Did you say that parsha is more important on like a higher level than the other three?
Why do you need to say that? I mean, you could if you wanted to do it. Why is that crucial?
I don't know, it seems like then you're valuing that for making special reference to.
Right, but I think he's saying there's a common theme that runs through all the Tefillin passages, and maybe most manifest perhaps in Shema Yisrael.
Are there any other Shema related things that we can that we don't say Baruch Shem
for? Oh, that's a cute question. Saying maybe there are other times where like the Shema association should come up, that we don't say Baruch Shem. Oh, that's a good example. Oh, that was good. Jacob Rockland. Good chiddush from the Chutzah Ptucha. Way to go. Okay. Okay. Excellent. Okay. Excellent job, Jacob. Jacob, tell the truth. Were you trying to avoid saying anything in Solskjaer so I wouldn't do that?
No.
Why were you sitting behind the corner?
Because I need fresh air. Because
what?
Fresh air.
Okay. You can go back there if you want to. All right. Okay, very good. Jacob, maybe, you're right. It would require some thought. Like, what are we doing when we don't do it? Okay, we're good now. Can we move on to the next one? Okay, great. Okay, let us turn the page. Okay. So we have two good explanations for Baruch Shem. Let's go back to the one bracha versus two bracha debate. And maybe the Aruch HaShulchan has given us a sense that there are two brachot, because one's on the act of mitzvah, and one is on the idea of tefillin, the idea of covenant and brit. Okay, so let's go to the Karen Ora source. We'll come back to the Rashba in a second. Okay, so the Karen Ora has an interesting critique. Okay, Karen, by the way, is an Achron. His name was Rav Yitzchak from Karlin. Okay, very interesting fellow. He wrote a perish on some less common Masechtot. Okay, he has a perish on Sota, a perish on Menachot. Well, when you're learning those Masechtot, it's well worth knowing about. Okay? What? Wait, I know he's starting to get excited. He was from Karlin. He was not a Karlin or Chassid. Okay? What? Yeah, I don't think he ever sung Karlin. Okay, I don't think he existed in his time. Okay? But you can still sing it when you're in Karen Oresan. It's okay. Okay. V'tam o shori ha-levi, v'tasham, dal mitzvah, hu od v'zikaro, u'laniyach u'al hanacha, shalom ha-kom mitzvah, imken etzarech l'shtei. Okay, before we get on, what is it, whose idea does it sound like a little bit? Doesn't it sound a little bit like Yerach HaShulchan? You're saying, what am I doing in al mitzvah? That's not about the act, that's about the od quality. Somehow about the symbolic import of the tefillin. And what's l'haniyach about? The actual putting on. Okay, I mean, it's not exactly the same terminology. Like the Aruch HaShulchan said, al mitzvah is a birkat hodah. But I think there is a similar idea. The idea is that the physical act calls for just one bracha. That is l'haniyach. But then there's another bracha on the old quality of tefillin, whatever tefillin is meant to symbolize. So look at the end of the third line. I find this quite fascinating. He's not happy. U'belav achi ein ze mukhrach. Ki ikar ha-brachot. And gets back to Jonah's point before. Nitkenu al ha-maseh. He said, what does the Karen Ora think the norm is? What do you make brachot on when you do mitzvot? On the actions, that's what we find. Velo al ta'aman. Is that interesting? What does he claim? Let's say I think this mitzvah is a great mitzvah because it accomplishes X. So then I have the physical act, and I also have what the mitzvah accomplishes. What does he claim? We do not find that You make one bracha on the act and another bracha on the rationale, as it were. What are his examples? You look at his, and I think he could be counted. Look at his examples. Dimken b'matz umar nami l'varashtayim. Al mitzvah matzah, ki la'ot al b'tzeket avotenu. Okay, what does he say? Isn't matzah symbolic too? So let's make one bracha on the act of eating matzah, and another bracha on all that matzah symbolizes. What's his other counterexample? Two lines from the bottom. What's his other counterexample? What else does he got there? Imkain. Mezuzah nami. Couldn't you say the same thing? Mezuzah has this grander symbolic import. So one bracha on the act of putting up the mezuzah, and another bracha that all mezuzah symbolizes. See, we like to argue that Karen Orr and Yitzchak from Karlin, this is not the norm. We normally do not have one bracha on the act, another bracha on the larger symbolic import. Yeah, David? Well, Kiddush is a little bit different because there the bracha kind of is the mitzvah. It's not a bracha preceding the act of mitzvah. Right? It's like Birkat HaMazon is a separate conversation also, right? Okay, yeah, Uri.
If you think that there's like a symbolic reason or like for a larger theme, then wouldn't you say that Niyach should be on the putting on both the Shayat and the Shayat?
Excellent. So I skipped that, but that was his first question on the second line. Very good. His first question is, why don't I make both of them on the Shayat? That's your question, right? You look at the second line. Karen already asked that question. Okay? So I would like to say, here I just have food for thought. I don't know exactly where to go with it. Even though I appreciate what he's saying, I think we get back to what Jonah and Daniel said. There are examples when we make multiple brachot. What about at a brit? Hey, who's been at a brit recently? Have you been at a brit recently? And remember the two brachot that come up? First you say, Asher Kitsharim Mustavit Sivanu Al HaMilah. And what the bracha right after that is? You remember what it's called? It ends, not Shekinu. Let's leave Shekinu as that for a second. There's a bracha called Lahakniso Bibito Shalavim Avinu. Does that ring a bell? Wouldn't that be a great parallel? Yeah, what's the first bracha about? Al Mila. The act of giving your kid a brit. What's the second one about? Lahakniso Bibito Shalavim Avinu. That a brit has a larger context. I'm not going to bracha on the act now. I'm making a bracha being part of the covenant of Am Yisrael. That also calls for a bracha. So I'd say that's an exact parallel to this. The only thing we have to work out is interesting, like why this would be more true of tefillin than, let's say, mezuzah. But I think you can work out a theory. Honestly, I'd be curious to hear. Because what would emerge? Sometimes we do make a bracha on the larger theme, sometimes we don't. That's what I think we'd have to say. In Brit Mila, we clearly do. One bracha on the Mila, one bracha on the Nisal of Brit. Right? Maybe tefillin we do also. One bracha on the putting on tefillin, one bracha on the relationship, on the larger import. For whatever reason, when it comes to matzah and mezuzah, we don't do that. But I think we can work out a theory. Okay, the Chutzav Tukha, what do you say?
But wouldn't... there are two different people say those brachas. The person who's going to do the mila, which nowadays is generally not the father, says the mila is the first bracha, and the
okay, you're making a great point, but I'm going to duck it for now. You're right. Part of the relevant analysis is who should make the bracha, for sure, but it's going to take us too far afield. A very good point. Yeah, Jacob?
I think the argument... That
when you're
bringing
on tefillin, that there are two separate mitzvahs
you're making two
different brachot.
One is
like
the physical act, but then the second mitzvah is also like an abstract.
I mean, you
would
say
kisala
brit is not just the symbol; it's actually a mitzvah.
Yeah, it's actually a mitzvah. But like when you're talking.
Okay, just how do you know that? It's just a
kiddush.
Just
what?
I mean, you say like in the list of mitzvah, I should count mila twice. There's the physical act of getting a mila and the kisala brit.
Yeah.
Okay, there is a certain kiddush there to say it's a separate mitzvah.
Yeah, I mean, you can see the same thing. Actual action as is a mitzvah. So like, there's a whole separate idea of like, the kavanah you're supposed to have. With
okay, and just to spell it, it's not true for mezuzah. Mezuzah is just the local act.
Yeah, I guess so.
Okay. Yeah, yeah,
Andrew. Yeah.
Why? Say, finish the sentence. No, Jake would say the second mitzvah is not so much an act, but an entry into covenant, right? And therefore, it calls for a different text. Okay, we're good, guys? Yeah, David?
Well, for mezuzah, it makes sense why we only do one, because then you would have to like take off your mezuzah and put it back on every single time like, you walk out the door.
Why?
Because if, I don't know.
Okay, I'm not sure why that would follow.
Okay.
Give me 5 more minutes, okay? Right, that's a great answer, David. That's a good right to move. Right, anytime you say a svar that your rabbi doesn't like, say, sorry, Rabbi, I was feeling it. Okay, that's great. What a great move. Okay, wait a minute. Okay, so let's just develop a third theory. Okay, we'll develop a third theory. Okay, look at the Mor HaKatan. He's just good, also good to know who he is. Because if you ever go back to the back of the Vilna Shas, right, remember that the riff is in the back of the Vilna Shas? On the bottom of the riff, you sometimes have what's called Hamor HaKatan and Mulchemet Hashem. Okay, probably you haven't gone through so much in Shir because they're not so easy as we showed them. Okay, anyone know who wrote the Mulchemet Hashem? Anyone know that? Do you know that? You're really good. John Seidel. Okay, Zevi. Ramban, very good. Do you know that from Maimonides? Okay, very good. Well, Maimonides. Okay, so very briefly, there was a Rishon from Provence named Rav Zrach Yalevi. Rav Zrach Yalevi wrote the Maor HaKatan, we'll get to that in a second, it's a great play on words, which is often critical of the Rif. Now, the Ramban was the great defender. He didn't like when the earlier authorities are attacked. He liked to defend people. So the Ramban wrote a book defending the Rif called Milchemet Hashem. Now, I've often pointed out to people, you only call your Sefer Milchemet Hashem if you're arguing with somebody. Right, if you write a Pirush on Shir HaShirim, you don't call it Milchemet Hashem. Okay, but the Ramban is arguing with Yuval Amar, so he calls his book Milchemet Hashem. But if you think about it, it's actually a very clever play on words. It's actually a double or a triple play. If your name is Rachya, why might we call your Sefer Hamor? Anyone? Jonah K, let's go, the brand. Yeah, what's Richad HaShemesh? Yeah, the sun's rising, the sun's shining. So that relates to light. So you call yourself R. But it gets even better. If he's commenting on a topic in Moed, it's called Maor HaKatan. If he's commenting on Ezekiel, he calls it Maor HaGadol. What other play is he doing now? What are the Maor HaKatan and the Maor HaGadol? Yeah, the sun and the moon, right? So if you're commenting on Moed, okay, pretty clever, right, Sam? That's a good name, guys. It's hard to top that for a good safer name. Because he plays off his name and plays off, right, Moed and Ezekiel. Okay. Okay, what? Okay, it's true. Right. And the Chutzah Ptuchah is a close second. Okay, so, one more second. Okay, so if you look at the Baal Hamar, he is a slightly different version. Okay, let's go to the third line of the Baal Hamar, very end of the line. Okay, we'll get to you in 1 minute. Let's say you spoke in between. So you make the same bracha again. The bracha shel yad and the shel rosh. So it's going to sound like the Baal Hamar is just like Rabbeinu Tam. Look what he throws in. What do you do when you spoke in between? Okay, you made laniach and shel yad and you forgot and you spoke. What do you do? You again fiddle with your tefillah shiad and you retie it. What does he claim? It's true that I then make two brachot after I spoke, but how do I do that? It's almost like I don't make two brachot in the shorosh. What do? I redo the shorosh. I don't see the difference there. He also thinks you make two brachot, but it sounds like no, but laniach is only meant for the shiad and al mitzvah is only meant for the shorosh. So how do I deal with it? I better fiddle with my shalyad, as it were, redo the shalyad, which justifies the two brachot. So now, to get one nafkamina, guys, I'll get to Uri. We now have three opinions, right? According to Rashi, the norm is one bracha. If you speak, then you make another bracha on the shalosh. According to Beit Tam, the norm is two brachot, one and one. If you speak, it becomes one and two. The Baal Hamar is a variation of Beit Tam. What's the Baal Hamar's position? One on shalyad. If you speak, what do? Redo the shalyad, and that's one, and then another one on the shalosh. Okay, last question, we'll get to Rilorgus. He's been waiting very patiently. Can anyone tell me a nafkamina between, just think guys, good Talmud of thought. Talmud can teach you how to think. Nafkamina between Rabbeinu Tam and the Baal Hamar. You might say, what's a nafkamina? Either way, I'm going to end up making two brachot after I speak. Can anyone think of a case that would divide between the Baal Hamar and Rabbeinu Tam? Alec.
It's like your villain falls off and you readjust it. Another
okay, good. Interesting point. You could ask that question. Okay, anybody else? What if I only have one pair of I only have a shel rosh? What if my shel yad got lost?
No,
right?
No.
Right? I'm sorry?
No
one. Oh, okay. Let's not go there. We'll try to... let's go with just the shel yad got lost. Okay, so you're right. And your case is a good case, but we're not going to go there anyway. Okay, so now, if I hold like Rabbeinu Tam, what could you argue? If I hold like Rabbeinu Tam, all I'm putting on is Sorosh. How many brachot should I make?
Two.
I think you'd argue two. Right? Because really I wanted both brachot to cover the Sorosh. If I hold like the Baal Hamar, what might you argue? Only one. Because I never really justified two brachot in the Sorosh. When I spoke, what I simply did was redid the Shalyat. So I think that might be a nice nafka meaning between the Balamar and the Bentam. Okay, Uri, what do you want to say?
According to Rashi, right, where in the Svardim, I mean, where you say, I think you said before, that like if you make the bracha and then you speak, in that case you make all mitzvos.
Yeah.
But if they really held that the Laniach was going on both originally, then why wouldn't at that point you return and make a...
Didn't we ask that question earlier? We asked the question. I have to know. We have not yet answered it. Okay.
I told Avi before I asked. I was like, it's for sure someone already asked.
Didn't we ask that like in 5 minutes of the year? No? No? Didn't we ask that question?
I don't know.
Okay, Jordy, did we? You know? Okay, that's it, Jordy. Stop daydreaming about Shiri already, Jordy. Okay. Okay. So, it's a good question. Right? I think that would be the difficulty of the Sephardi position that we have not addressed. Right, if really Laniach is meant to cover both, how come when I talk, all of a sudden I switch the Nusach? By the way, you could even argue, or it's good, because you could argue both logically and even reading-wise. Okay, let's look at one more source and wrap it up here, guys. Look at the Rashba in source 7. Okay, look at the Rashba in source 7. Okay, and here's an interesting question. Like, all of life, I think all of Talmudic life is a combination of reading carefully and thinking carefully. Right? Those are the two goals we have here. Learn how to be good readers, learn how to be good thinkers. Okay, so Uri just asked a thought question on this Friday position. I think we could also ask a reading question on this Friday position. Okay, look at the Rashba in the third line. Okay, says the Rashba, the Gam Kashali, okay, Lefi Shitat Rashi, Mashamar Sach Ben Tfila Tfila, Choser Umavarech, Mashma, Choser Umavarech, Oto Bracha Shabirech Kfar. Okay, what does he claim language-wise? What is the language? What language point does he pick up on to try to support Ben Tam? Can we get it? Okay, we'll make it even better. Look, two lines from the bottom. He has a suggested alternate expression. What could the Gemara have said? Havid le lomar, sach ben tfila, sarich levarech. Okay, guys, a little language sensitivity. What does the Gemara actually say? Sach ben tfila tfila. What does the Gemara actually say? No, that's what it should say, he says. What does it actually say? Sorry. No, somebody get it. What does it actually say? Choser umavarech is what the Gemara says, right? He says it could have said sarich levarech. Now, I realize, guys, it's just a little word, but all of life is a little difference between words. What's the different connotation between choser umavarech and sarich levarech? Alec?
You're making the bracha specifically on that part that's done.
Okay, but also, what does choser seem to convey? But what? Ah, who said that? Simon Gavin, excellent. When you go back, usually what does that convey? You go back and do the same thing you did before. Right? Because that's the simple reading of Choser Umavarech. So if you guys get this, you prove to me you understood the whole shir. Why is that better for Rabbeinu Tam than Rashi? Well, let's play it out. If you'll like Rashi, what happened? I made Lahaniach on the Shalyad. That would be the other bracha, only bracha. Since I spoke, what do I do? I make a new bracha. What does he want to claim? Don't use the term Choser Umavarech. What would be a better term? Sarich Umavarech. Why is that not a problem if you hold like Rabbeinu Tam? Because you hold like Rabbeinu Tam, I wanted to only make Laniach on the Ad and Al Mitzvat on the Sarosh. Once I speak, what do? I make Laniach again. So what fits beautifully? The phrase Choser Umavarech. Again, so I feel a little badly because we kind of have left the Sephardim with questions. Okay, but it's okay. Don't worry. Andrew Arkin will explain during lunch why the Sephardim meaning is really correct. It is okay. But now we have a logical question for them and a reading question for them. Okay, guys, we'll do a brief review. And you guys were a lot of fun today as usual. We're going to move on. Okay, we're good? Okay, I haven't yet commented on the mayor all day. 5 minutes left. Okay, I heard you're going to Modi'in to see how the other half lives. Okay, is that correct? Yeah, Justin, son, where are you going for Shabbos? Oh, that's it. Well, you stick with the mayor. Okay, excellent. Okay, let's do a brief review. Okay, we got the Ashkenazi-Sephardi split, right? Sephardim say one bracha unless it's a mistake, then two. Ashkenazim say two bracha, if it's a mistake, you make three. Ashkenazim throw in Baruch Shem. If we ask the Mishnah Berurah why we throw in Baruch Shem, what would the Mishnah Berurah say?
To protect yourself
from Safek bracha. Very good, Dan. What did he have to throw in? Why is it not like a normal case of Safek bracha? What did the Mishnah Berurah throw in?
Sure, right.
Well, here we're really sure it's right. It's just an extra throw in. Because if it was normal Safek bracha, we would say... No bracha? Great. What was the Aruch HaShulchan's revolutionary shot? It's not about Safek bracha at all. Well, first you have to explain why we're making two bracha. What did the Aruch HaShulchan say? One on the act of mitzvah, classic birkat mitzvah. One is more of a birkat shevach on the covenant. And therefore, since it's a Shema theme, the Shema theme inspires Baruch Hashem. Great, very good Chiddush there, Aruch HaShulchan. That raised a very interesting larger question. When in the world of mitzvot, you have a bracha on the act and another bracha on the larger theme. What was the Karen Orr's objection, guys? Karen Orr says, we don't find that regarding what? Matzah, we don't find that regarding mezuzah. But we pointed out together that there are cases we find it. What is a great case where we find it? Okay, I think Brit Mila is a great case. Bracha on the meal and a bracha on lachni super bitu shalom avinu. So that would lead to a larger, interesting machshava question. When do we just focus on the act? When is the symbolic import so important that it calls for a seventh bracha? Apparently for Brit Mila and for tefillin, that might be what's happening. Okay, great. Finally, we had the Baal HaMor's third position. According to the Baal HaMor, as it were, it's a variation of in time. You normally would make two. When you speak, you end up making three. But how does it work? Not that you make two on the Sharosh, but rather, what does he say? Move around the Shalyad and tie it again. So you're kind of redoing the Shalyad and making L'Aniyah. I thought a Nafkamina might be if you only had a Sharosh. Great. Finally, we had Uri Lorkis' good logical slash textual question on the Sephardi position. The logical question would be, if you're redoing the Bracha, logically, why do you switch terminology? That's just a logic question. Why did the Rashba think that the language also suggests that Rabbi Natan's right? Because Chos and Mavarek sounds more like you're making the same bracha. Okay, Jacob, lesson.
I think going back to the Karen Ora,
yeah.
We're talking about different cases. It might be that you actually are making a separate bracha for some abstract idea with the fill-in and the previous, because they are referred to as Odes.
Oh, good. So you want to say the test is when the word ode appears.
Yeah.
Okay, and therefore there's more. I'm even going to prove your point. Very good, Jacob. Okay, why don't we wear tefillin on Shabbos? You don't know what the drasha famously is? Where's the famous drasha? David P. Lichitz, what do you say? Okay, good. But you're right, but be a little more. Okay, the idea is that Shabbat is called an ode, and tefillin's an ode, and somehow the Shabbat ode renders the need for the tefillin ode superfluous. Okay, whatever that means. But notice, Jacob, no one ever suggested that on Shabbat you can take down your mezuzah. Right? Because somehow, as important as mezuzah is, it does not have somehow that ode quality. Okay? So I think you're onto something. You have to spell out the form. You're onto something.
You do a Brit
Mila on Shabbat. Interesting. Yeah, yes. Now your Brit Mila does override Shabbat. Okay? That's an interesting point, but not for us right now. Yeah, Zach Stabler. So, last point, guys, we'll close with this. Okay, wait, just, Jonathan, do you have a question? Jonathan, is your hand up before? Okay, right. I'm just going to end with Zach's point. What I just said might not mean that it's us that wear tefillin on Shabbat, might only mean that it's not a chiyuv. Okay, now this is a huge nafkamina, okay, whether it's us or not a chiyuv. Really, anyone know who's into us wearing tefillin on Shabbat? Where's Simon Kaufman? Who thinks it's a terrible thing to wear tefillin on Shabbos or Yom Tov? The Zohar. Okay, the Mekubalim are into this. Okay? But that, who could tell me a good halachic nafkamina, whether you just don't have to wear tefillin on Shabbat or just us wear tefillin on Shabbat? A nafkamina, but there might be whether tefillin are muktzah or not. Right? If I thought that I just don't have to wear it, okay, I don't have to wear it, but if I want, I could put it on, and then it would have a purpose. Then it's not obvious that tefillin should be muktzah. If I say it's us to wear tefillin on Shabbat, so then it has no purpose, and then tefillin should be muktzah. So there are nafkamina between the two positions. Simon.
I'm saying, what time
muktzah would it be? It's a very interesting question. Do some research, Simon, okay, for next week. Is it klishim l'achol? Is there a muktzah in certain cases? Okay, check it out. Okay, yeah.
Hey, you're like
well, that's why, you might have noticed, you might have noticed this year that in chutz there's all kinds of minhagim about tefillin and chol hamoed. In Israel, nobody puts it on. Right, you bring tefillin to shul, they'll start stoning you. Right, you notice that? Okay, that's because, the Zohar is very influential for the Talmidim of the Grod Mishnah of Kara who made Aliyah, and that became the Israeli Minhag. Okay, that's what it has to do with. Yeah.
You wear Shabbat.
Yeah. In fact, you'll see there's a sugya in Erevin about how to transport tefillin on Shabbos. There's a sugya in Erevin about it. Yeah.
So you're allowed to say if it's just not obligated, but maybe you're allowed to.
Yeah, but what if the prevalent minhag is to treat it like it's usher? Yeah. Let's say you guys wanted to move a rock around on Shabbos for whatever strange reason. Okay? Not to throw anybody. You just wanted to move a rock around. What can you do before Shabbos? You could designate it as your paperweight. This is going to be my paperweight for the next year. It, that rock is no longer Muktzah.
So you have to get the spill of the course out of the
spill. I don't get the right now. All right, guys. Evan, have a great job. Yeah.
What about the spill on the second day?
It's a good question. I'll first right now. Ashrei, Yoshrei.